This is Jenny Allen, and you are listening to the Made for This podcast. Well, guys, we are back with Untangle Your Emotions. You're going to love this podcast. It's going to be super practical. Last week, we had everybody crying, their prayer at the end. And this week, we are going to talk basics and practical things. Some of you are really glad we're finally here. Kate Summers.
Hey,
is with us again, my daughter. So fun. Good, it's really been so fun. I'm going to be sad when this is over.
I know.
It's like our hangout time. So thanks for doing the season with me. And I invited her, if you don't know, to do the season with me because no one has experienced more of my emotions outside of my husband than Kate. And I have experienced so many of hers. And so we have lived our life together in real life, in real time, figuring out our emotions together. She was born pretty emotionally intelligent. So she's been my emotional teacher all my life.
That's a cute way of saying it.
Yeah.
Where before, but let's be real, talk to sweet people with crazy emotional toddlers right now.
Yeah,
now it's emotional intelligence, but at the time it was manic.
Like, It's so accurate. You were a lot to parent. There's no doubt. Uh-huh. You really turned out. I'm really glad I stuck with it. Yeah. We're going to talk this week. Yes, everybody knows they're my favorite. All of my kids believe it to their bones. Yeah, I always have wanted at my funeral for somebody to say, stand up if you are your mom's favorite, and for all four of you to stand up, because you would. Yeah, you would totally. All four stand up.
Totally.
Very confident.
Well, this is a great place to start because my favorite thing about this chapter is that it starts off with Connor and the story about him replacing
her older brother.
His brakes. So Connor has given me a really hard time for being a bad driver my entire life. I actually haven't had any car troubles in a while.
Because now you pay for your own stuff.
Okay. Well, it definitely heightens it. I also just think I've become a better driver.
Yeah.
But Connor would like ruthlessly, like if anything happened, he would hold it over my head forever. Now, recently, Connor was trying to replace his
brakes. He's
going to
get so mad if he finds out about this.
Okay, y'all.
He didn't even know this story's in here like this. He hasn't read it.
But here's the thing.
The benefit of my kids not reading my
books. I get to tell the story because, Connor, you've given me so much crap about my car stuff, and this is payback. Anyway, love you, Connor. But he's awesome. He's super like salt of the earth guy. You'd meet him and be like, did you grow up in a cow town? Like, this is not, you did
so
not grow
true.
Up in liberal Austin.
Accent.
Like, anything that he can do for himself rather than
pay
hiring
for it.
Someone, yeah. He will do it. So, gold star for that. But
yeah, he's actually pretty handy.
No, he's super handy. Yeah. But he's trying to replace his brakes in y'all's back driveway.
Right. I don't know this.
Himself.
I go out there. If you've read the book, you know this. So I go back there and there's black tar everywhere. And he has his truck, his huge truck lifted way, way up. And he's, I don't know what he's doing. His wheels are off. Like it looks like he's doing major construction on Hunt's vehicle. I'm like, what are you doing, buddy? And he said, I'm replacing my brakes. And I was like, that's terrible idea.
Right.
I was like,
out of all the repairs.
Right. It's not something you risk. Like, you really need your brakes. So that's not something you do. And he was like, Mom, I fix people's cars all the time. And let me just tell you, typically he's fixing tires.
Replacing taillights.
Right. These are the things he does. He doesn't replace brakes. He's never done that until this minute. And I was like, I don't think this is a good idea. But he's a grown man. And I go inside. And the next thing I know, I hear Dad screaming, yelling, and I hear this huge crash so bad. And our house, we have an alley in the back of our house, and the car, his huge truck had crashed into our neighbor's fence and nearly their house because they have like a little garage that's right by their fence.
Like his car had been in, he was trying to test to see if his brakes that
and
he had now put in.
They didn't work at all.
Were working, and he put his car in reverse.
Now,
and it wouldn't stop going in reverse, so it backed up into the neighbor's.
It was a perfect story. I actually was writing this chapter when this happened. It was so great. I will never forget. I drove to my coffee shop to write, left my house, and I was like, perfect timing.
Thank you
for this.
This is the bane of our existence. Like, imagine
so
your
good.
Mom.
Fodder.
Yes, like your mom's constantly
looking for
needing sermon illustrations and stories for her stuff.
So true. But how I applied it in the book, if you haven't read it, is that there comes a point with our emotions that we have now moved out of our abilities. So in my opinion of the situation, Connor had moved out of his abilities. Mm-hmm. And so I started with that story just to say, if some of you are realizing, wow, this sadness has been here for years. And this sadness has been here in a way that I am not functioning like I could, and I need help. And so I want to really clearly be sensitive to this. I mean, we tell a funny story, but you probably need more than this book. Mm-hmm. Okay. Somebody said this book is thousands of dollars worth of counseling. I think it saves you on the front end of counseling because it lays a foundation that you need to go into counseling. And I think it'll save you a few sessions. There's no doubt. But if you really need help, you might need a doctor. You might need a counselor. And I would just say, don't be afraid to get help. One of the things I talk about in the book too is just get a good physical, find out about your hormone levels. All of that affects your emotions. So this is the week we're going to be really, really practical and give you advice. We are going to be fix it girls together.
Doctors.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever.
Well, I have consulted a lot of doctors on this work because I do believe there is a physical part to this as well. So when do you know if you need help? And another analogy I use in the book is just the ocean, and emotions are like an ocean, and sometimes they're hitting you at your heels. And I've told you this before, but I'm gonna say it again. Sometimes they're hitting you at your heels. Sometimes you're waist deep and you're like, this is okay. Like, I feel sad, but I'm okay. I'm functioning. Some of you are in a season of grief or a season of intense emotion, and you're swimming and you're out deeper, but you're in control. And then some of you have been carried out to sea and you are truly drowning. Like, there's a sense of, it feels out of control. It feels like, I don't know what to do. You feel like my husband did in the book, where it feels like you're looking up and you can't get to the light. You can't get to the top of the water. That is when for sure you need help. Now, I am a believer that everybody would benefit from counseling. So wherever you are in that story, I think you would grow tremendously from having a counselor. But I also think those of you that really, really need help, it's time to admit that. And it's time to say, this is more than I can handle. And I need to ask for help. And so, you know, begin with a doctor's appointment, find a trusted Christian counselor. We'll have a link to a website that recommends counselors. But that's a first place to start. As we're talking about choosing and we're talking about going forward, sometimes it's not as simple as just being honest and feeling our feelings and sharing them with others and trusting God in them. It goes a little bit further. And that's what this chapter and this week is all about.
And I love your questions that you gave from a doctor who is your primary care doctor.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of just to run through.
Yeah, this was
just
good.
Practical things mm-hmm. that affect it.
Yeah, this was from our doctor in Austin, that she would ask these questions before she would ever put someone on medicine. I thought they were really helpful.
Yeah, they say, are you moving your body every day? And then I love how you have the little, like, the reason why produces serotonin. Are you sharing what's difficult with your friends and family? Heals neural pathways. How much alcohol are you drinking? Depletes dopamine. Are you eating a balanced diet? Affects every bodily function we have and therefore our emotional life. Are you spending time with Jesus? Yes, she asks that of patients who are people of faith because she knows that a connection with Jesus is healing in ways nothing else can be.
I thought that was so great. I've never forgotten it. Because I think we can't just jump to medicine. Medicine is such a helpful tool. I'm so grateful for it because, you know, I just think about your dad who's really open about his journey, and it is the thing that helped him get to the surface, he would say, that you often need medicine when it feels like you can't do the things you need to do. So, you know, you may be in that situation. What she's asking is, are you trying these things first? Because these things also mm-hmm. help. But there are times, and Zach was in that position, Dad was in that position, where you literally can't get to the surface. You can't work out. You can't get out of bed. Like, that is a real state for people. And, you know, medicine can help get to where you can function. So I'm not saying you have to be working out to get on medicine. But her point was just, these things help too. And so before you just run to medicine, make sure that you're not like the little reel that we both have seen. I sent it to you of, have you gotten outside today? No. Mm-hmm. Have you moved your body? No. Like, and yeah, then totally. It's like, I'm just down and I don't know why, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, probably because you've been in bed all day. Like, that right. That might be it. So I wanted a little bit of that in this book too, because we've got to be honest that there are things in our control mm-hmm. that we can do that can help. We need to take care of our mental health like we take care of our physical health. And if you don't do either, you need to do both.
And if you're still sitting in this, you know, it's like this weird balance between, like, you don't want to, like, you know, be gaslighting yourself into, like, oh, well, I'm just not being, like, I just can't get it. Like, I feel like it's really easy sometimes right. when you're in a really down place
yes.
to be like, well, I could just suck it up and do the things. And again, we've said this before around medicine, but community is like your best friend. Like having good friends to like, if no one knows, say you like cannot get out of bed and no one's knows that you're stuck in bed like that and you feel, it feels so dark in your room. You just have to invite people into it. Like if you're just, next time you're sitting there and you just feel helpless, it's like, you've just got to call an SOS to a friend and they've got to sit with you in it and you got to tell them honestly what you're feeling. A lot of times, like I know in hard places for me, nobody's had the full picture. Even times in high school, you know, where like that was really hard for me. And I felt some reason of like, why is this feel so much harder for me than it does everyone else?
Say that specifically, what feels hard?
I remember going to small group. Oh, it's so hard. Even now it's vulnerable to talk about because it feels stupid to me, which is probably a good thing to talk about. But I would go to small group and I would cry and choke this out. And I would just say, can y'all pray for me to help me get out of bed? Mm-hmm. And I felt so stupid. Like it just was this right. vulnerable place of like me asking people to pray that I would have the strength to like not just wake up, feel immediate anxiety and dread for the day and want to just fall back into this escape of sleep.
Because at that time, you wouldn't have said you were anxious and depressed. Mm-mm. It was looking back that you realized that
no,
really was.
And I would say y'all, like to some extent, like—
We missed I wasn't, it too.
Yeah, like I remember, it was just and that's where I think a ton of my self-loathing started because it was just like, why can't you get your ish together? Recently, my counselor had me just picture that, Kate, of like me sleeping in my little twin bed and waking up and it's, you know, I'm late.
Again.
Again. And I'm going to have to go have conversations again. And I'm just waking up into failure. And all I want to do is just escape again. He made me go sit on the end of that Kate's bed of like me now. Just picture, like I just had to close my eyes and picture details about the room. And I went back and I sat on the end of the bed with her. Oh, I'll cry right now. I'm talking about it. But he just had me like have an interaction with her. We just cried together for a really long time. Like, I know it's kind of a woo-woo thing to talk about, but like in this, you know, walking back to that version of myself and grieving how much she hated herself and how she was stuck in that self-hate. Like she just couldn't move in that. And I just cried with her for a really long time and said, I'm so sorry because I was apologizing to myself for hating her and being ashamed of her. Yeah. And then we walked through Jesus in that room. And we walked through the gospel and we've talked about this before, but this like what desire to control and this desire to do it out of our own power because we think that that's how everything is fixed. But the heart of the gospel being so upside down and uncomfortable that like my freedom there was found in the fact that I wasn't waking up into failure. Like I was actually the deeper truth because I was saved by the blood of Christ and in his resurrection is I was waking up into resurrection because his mercies are new every morning, but I was not believing that. And so part of when we're talking about like choosing and like those physical things, I mean, part of it is believing that truth. But I also think that there's a theology thing there and there usually is, but also there was something physical in me that was keeping me from being able to like walk in the reality of that.
A lot of it was self-sabotaging even a right. circle because there was a reality to like you were missing so much school. It was really affecting
yeah.
you.
Y'all like how this many? Is such a crazy thing to share on the podcast. But like junior year, I was one tardy away from going to court because I had 267 unexcused absences. So like class periods.
And we as parents, I mean, you'd think like just get her out of bed, like. But it wasn't right. like that, and yeah. it was hard to know what was wrong because, in large part, you were winning, you were successful, you were
right. I was compartmentalizing.
You were happy. You had lots of friends. Like yeah. there was a lot great about your life, mm-hmm. to where it wasn't obvious that it was anxiety and depression. But yeah. now, you know, you kind of looking back would diagnose it as that, and even just hearing that, like that you cannot get out of bed, it kind of feels obvious. But you also were just a really good performer. You were so good at showing up and winning everybody over. And I have so much compassion on her too. And I did then too. I mean, there were times I was angry for sure. You are because you're just like, just change your behavior. Mm-hmm. Like, another important thing that you and I never talk about is we're both pretty severe ADD. Mm-hmm. I think that was part of the context mm-hmm. where I remember you used to say things to me like, why is it so much easier for other people to do basic life yeah. skills than it is for me. And I knew why, because it's hard for me too. I do think there was a lot that brought that about. So it was definitely not as simple as you just getting out of bed. So how did it help? How did that feel to do that?
I felt compassion and I increased my grace for myself, which I think is such a hard thing for me to say because I feel like I'm enabling sin.
I know.
By having this grace for myself.
This is a deeper.
It's a really deep, y'all. I'm out here on this podcast, like processing this live, but like I'm still in the middle of really digging up this lie. And I explain it as the theology in my head. I can tell you what is sound and I can tell you, I can walk through scripture of what I believe about what God thinks of me. And
intellectually, you got it.
Yes. But what I've been talking about with my friends and with my counselor is, I think we've talked about it on here before, but like the theology of my heart, it's a much slower thing. In some ways I have to kind of like rest the fact that like, yes, I know, like kind of with my brain, I'm like, hey, I know that you know the answer, but we've got to sit in this a little longer with people and really wrestle through what your heart believes based on what you're doing to heal that and to really believe it in your heart.
Yeah, I remember being in counseling and Kurt Thompson just saying, hey, Jenny, what happens if you stop saying I should? And I thought, and he goes, I think you think you're going to be carried out to sea.
Yeah.
But is I should the language of God? Like, is that how God leads you? Or is it his kindness that leads you to repentance? Is it kindness that leads you to obedience? What you're saying is the grace of the gospel is actually like believing all of that would have helped you get out of bed. So there's this sense of like the behavior can sometimes follow grace and kindness. It doesn't, I think we're afraid we're gonna fall off the rails if we give ourselves permission to feel or permission to experience the true endless bounds of God's grace. Then why would we obey, right? Then why would we ever get out of bed? Why would we ever do what's right? If it's endless, if God's gonna forgive everything, why would we ever do what's right? You know, this is Galatians. The writer of Galatians goes, man, never be like this. No way, Jose, you're not gonna take that grace and squander it. You're gonna celebrate it every day of your life. You're gonna be so grateful for it. So I think we are afraid of trusting in the grace and kindness of God.
When life gets busy and sometimes it's the little things that feel like they can take so much time and energy, but you know you're supposed to do them, like washing your face or your hair and hair care. Like, I have never been a big, 10-step process skincare, hair care type person, but Pros has made it totally seamless and foolproof. Ever since I switched to a custom hair and skin routine with Pros, I have noticed so many benefits. My hair is overall shinier and healthier. It's more manageable. What's best is that Pros is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything that they do, from their in-depth hair consultation to their made-to-order model. Pros has millions of possible formulas, but only one of them is uniquely yours or mine. So take my custom shampoo and conditioner, for example. So they were formulated to help cut brassiness in my blonde highlights. They were formulated to keep my hair shiny, but volume, and they actually deliver. Even after a few days, my hair feels fresh and shiny without being greasy, and I love the smell of every single one of my Pros products. Pros isn't just better for you, it's better for the planet. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. So in between your shipments, you can use their review and refine tool, which learns from my feedback and adjusts my formula to keep up with seasons and changes in my life. Pros is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin that they're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/madeforthis. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/madeforthis. That's PROSE.com/madeforthis.
For everybody listening that just is like, okay, where's the practical? Like, what do I do? I'll do it. Help me do it. I think that was so helpful, Kate, for someone who feels like I haven't been able to do what's right and I don't know why and I don't know what to do next. And it's to get help. That's it. You ask for help. But to the person who's like, you know, I'm just tired of being sad a lot of days. Mm-hmm. I don't feel depressed. I don't feel like paralyzed. I just feel down. I think it might be helpful just to go through some of the things the book talks about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's just read. Yeah. Some of these.
Yeah, let's do it. And I feel like so much even now, like this is where I am currently. And so it's not like you're either one or the other. Like,
right.
I feel like there's so much messaging, at least that I hear, because we've swung, you know, like maybe the past generation was like, mental illness isn't real. And then now we've swung to the other side, you know.
Well, where everybody has it and,
right,
and
where there's no, your problem totally is always stuck. Rooted right. in a mental illness. Right. And which is such a scary like swing to like swing over there. And again, to like abandon this empowerment of like you can choose, like through the power of Christ winning victory over sin, you can wake up and choose to not sin.
Yeah.
And there's something so, again, exciting in that. That doesn't feel like a, like, oh, the burden of responsibility is on me to do everything right. It's a freedom. Okay, so let's jump into the practicals of some helpful things that we get to choose that you covered in this chapter. First one being limiting screen time. I love that you started with them, this one.
Oh, it's the one.
I know. And
it's the one for me.
I think it's the one for everyone and almost a lot of people. And I think that a lot of people don't actually talk about how much it affects their lives because it's almost a cliche and it's slowly being normalized how much it's shifting our lives.
Yeah, I really admire you on this. I think you should share a little bit about some of your rules and how you limit this.
Yo, I try, but then again, like—
It's just hard.
Yeah, so me and Charlie have each other's screen time passwords. You can set it in your settings where, like, I have 15 minutes of Instagram, and the reason I even have that is because I run a business and I have to post. And so I have 15, like, I have to use that 15 minutes to post on my Instagram page.
Kate Summers photo.
Oh, my gosh. and y'all, Kate even Summers then, I forget a lot of the times, or I'll use it scrolling on something. But yeah, honestly, y'all, I think for some of you— and probably me, I wish I could totally get off of Instagram because I have an addictive personality. I think a lot of us do. I think some of y'all are maybe in a place with technology where you have to get rid of it and you need to get right with God in that. Like, and I think that there is—
It's a fast. You do
yes,
it.
Yes. You don't need to announce it because that's part of how your brain has even wired you that like you need to be seen to be significant and how that started changing your mind. And it's changing your mind away from the things of God, because the things of God is to be in a room by yourself with him, and that there's not a part of you that needs to be seen on top of that. Like, I think it's genuinely, like, I've seen it when I'm on social media too much. I'm just so aware of how the things that I'm doing look as opposed to what I'm actually doing.
Yeah.
And what a, like, smart distraction from us carrying out the mission of God and walking in intimacy with God in the moment. I think some of y'all need to get the heck off. And you need to just like have a friend that has your code, and you just need to detox for a little bit and ask God, what would you put this in its rightful place? Because I want you more than I want distraction and that I need to be connected on social medias. And some of y'all need it too to realize that you're not going to die. Like, it's not the end of the world to get off of it. And so I think that has been such a helpful tool. Before, when I could completely get off, I would. I would take months off.
Yeah, me too. And I took 3 months off last summer. Yeah. I take a month off every summer. It's the best. I always have a hard time coming back because it's just so enjoy getting away from the noise. And the next one is sitting in silence. And it's really hard to do that with phones.
Yes.
I mean, we used to wake up before smartphones. You don't remember this, kid, but I used to wake up in the morning and it was quiet. You would have a quiet time before you talked to anybody. And you hadn't inputted anything in your mind. But now your alarm wakes you up on your phone. You pick it up. You have 3 texts. You have all kinds of things. One thing I did that did help me get off my phone more and feel the, you know, not feel the urgency was I removed email from my phone. So now it's just one less thing pinging me. Another thing you can do is get rid of all notifications. So you should never have notifications on for any of your social media. It just pings you all the time.
Oh, yeah. I know.
That ping is addictive. So get all your notifications turned off. You know, there's a great show that I think every human should watch. I believe it's on Netflix. It's called The Social Dilemma. And it teaches you, it makes you really cynical about social media. It teaches you the addictive nature of it and that they truly are trying to make us addicted. They are literally, the commodity is our attention. For the first time in history, our attention is
the currency.
The currency. Mm. That is what companies pay for, your brain space. So you need time where that is not being hijacked by technology. You need a lot of time that is not.
I think what I've seen with my own brain, if I feel uncomfortable with silence, like if there's something that makes me feel not at home in silence, that is not of God. Like when I am abiding in the Spirit, I'm making space to be with God, I feel at home in silence rather than like, I need to get out of this. And so part of that is the practice of like meditation and choosing to like almost make yourself sit there until it's not uncomfortable anymore.
Yeah.
But it's going to be uncomfortable for a while. But that discomfort, like how quickly you get uncomfortable with silence, should be a flag to you of like, that's not necessarily normal, but it's become so normal for everybody because we don't, there's so much noise all the time. Just be curious about how uncomfortable it makes you.
Now let's talk about our bodies. Let's talk about eating. Let's talk about working out because this really can affect us. Both of us are so sensitive to food. We wish we weren't because we love to eat everything. But I do feel like every time I fast from gluten, from dairy, all of that, I feel my emotions lift. It is weird. I feel physically better. I feel sharper mentally and I feel happier.
Yeah.
And so I think it's important to talk about this because we often are talking about it in light of our bodies or trying to lose weight or be healthier. And it's like, no, actually a more motivating factor for me has been how much better I feel. That when I have alcohol and gluten, I literally, it takes out me out for a few days. I don't feel the same afterwards. And so I just think we need to mention that and just for you to know your body. Some people don't react to those things in the same way. Great for you. That's not my story. I just have to be really sensitive to it and to know and to notice that that might be one of the reasons that I feel really low for the week because I have not been careful about what I'm putting in my body.
And the world has never been more separated, like our work being separated from like things that we need embodied in our lives. Like the fact that it's like you go to work, you sit somewhere, you look at a screen, and then you pay for a workout subscription, and then you pay, like, you know, where like we've moved away from this, like we're so connected to how we get our food or we're, and then that takes physical labor and all the things. And I'm not suggesting we all go move to a farm, but I am saying that like there's just like an awareness there of like, how can I incorporate this back? How can I bring this back into my daily life? And if that's, I'm talking on the phone, I'm going to go on a walk.
That's right. Like, and your dad's so good about that. And we've gotten good at that. We almost every night that we are not out doing something, we go on a walk. That has helped our mental health. I think more than anything, it's helped my sleep. It's just a good practice of when you wake up or right before you go to bed, like just move your body however you can, wherever you are.
Yeah. You're just incorporating it into things that you're already doing. There's also so much, I feel like, on the internet being said about like all these different foods, and it almost makes you feel like every food is bad for me. And
yeah,
it's so like
true.
It's so scary. And it's, there's so many topics like that where you can, this overload of information and all these different people saying different things makes me feel paralyzed. And so it makes me feel helpless. Like, okay, what's the point of even trying if everything is bad for me? What would you say even to like—
To know your body. So I just, I encourage people, what I did to learn was that I fasted from things. And then when I would add them back, my body was sensitive to it. I even asked my functional medicine doctor, I said, oh my gosh, you've made me so sensitive to blank, thinking his fasting had made me. He goes, Jenny, you know, that's just how you felt all the time when you ate gluten. Yeah. And I mean, that was a wake up call, was I had gotten used to feeling bad. And then when I felt better, I noticed how awful I felt when I would eat it. So I think that's the fastest, easiest way is just to cut a lot of things, to start with a very bland diet. You're going to start with vegetables and meat. And then you're going to start, you know, and some people would say take out meat. But then you can start, you know, go for a week and then you can start adding back, you know, carbs
and dairy. A little science
experiment.
You're just taking out variables. Like when she says fasting, she's not talking about like spiritual fasting. I feel like
That's true.
Not necessarily, which you, I mean, it's like good, but this was more functional of like, I'm going to remove variables slowly to see what's having an impact
on
my body.
And then I felt so good. And it was like, okay, what can I add back? Please, Lord, let it be cheese, please. And cheese I'm okay with. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not good with like a big old glass of milk. I can't do that much dairy, but
can't body that.
Yeah. But I can do a little in cheese. Praise the good Lord. Queso still is a part of my life.
I love that.
Well, I hope this has been helpful. I know we've covered all kinds of things in this one, but that's kind of, there was the smattering of this chapter, and I do feel like we had to just go here. So next week we are going to be wrapping season 16. We will see you next week.
You guys, I have a special request to make.
Okay.
You know, on your podcast app where you can leave ratings and reviews on the podcast that you listen to? Well, it is honestly like one of Jenny and I's favorite things. It's one of those ways that we get to know you just a little bit by your reviews and your ratings. And it helps other people find out about the show. So would you go today, and if you've been listening for a while and you're enjoying the show, can you go leave a rating and review? We would so appreciate it. and we're always grateful that you're here. We'll see you next time for another episode of the Made for This podcast.